Okay, sometimes you think that the first word, that the first thought that is going to come to you when you get a phone call from your local Jewish institution is they're asking for a donation. So here, this parsha is actually named donation. The whole parsha has this theme, identifying it, this theme of donation, but we are going to understand and be made to see the positives of donation and the idea that truma is something which we don't only see as a sacrifice, but we see as something that's very positive for us. Even though it's hard sometimes to convince people and they need a little urging, but ultimately to be involved in donating to the tzibur is something that's in our own benefit. And that's what the parsha essentially conveys to us by telling us, "Vedaber Hashem al Moshe leimor, daber al bnei Yisrael, v'yichu li truma." That speak to the Jews and tell them what? Tell them to give a truma? So the language of v'yichu li truma is an interesting language because it's as if we're saying they should take a contribution. So why is it take and not give? So some suggest that this is meant to convey just how difficult it is, that we're talking to the Gaboyim here, and the Gaboyim are going to have to work hard in order to extract a donation. But the Beis Halevi has a often quoted idea that it's meant to convey that if you really want to take something for yourself, if you have money, you have resources, and you really want to use them to acquire something, it's not so easy to do. Because how do you invest in a way that's really secure? Or how do you even just hold on to your money? You put it in the bank, you buy stocks and bonds, you buy valuables, what can you do that you can really guarantee that you'll actually have it? And as he explains, the most secure way to actually make sure that your resources will stick with you is if you use them towards a dvar mitzvah. So then that creation of a schus, that investment in something holy, that's the only thing that's really eternal. That's the only way to really acquire something with your money. So the yichuli truma, by giving it towards a holy purpose, that's actually an act of kicha. That's actually an investment, and that's the only investment that's really eternal. Now, the Beis Halevi also notes here that the placement of this parsha right after Mishpatim is also to convey to us that Kadosh Baruch Hu is the Sonei Gezel Ba'ola, that we shouldn't think that it's okay to steal in order to make donations. So before we're told that we should contribute to the Mishkan, so we're first told what the rules are of Dinim Amanus, and we're reminded of the rules, regulations in this area, so that we understand that whatever we donate has to be on the up and up, has to be legit, and can't be from Gezel. In fact, the Aznayim Latorah has an interesting observation, kind of the other side of this, where he notes that after the Jews were told Lo Signov, so in fact the Yireim Ushleimim among them, the holy Jews were concerned that they had taken from Mitzrayim, that was itself a mitzvah, they had taken from Bizas Mitzrayim, so maybe they should give it back. Maybe that was a violation of Geneva. And here they're being told that they can't use Gezel for the Mishkan. So, and nonetheless, they're being told still to build. So that actually was a chizik to them that the Bizas Mitzrayim that they had was legitimate. It's interesting, kind of a roundabout point. So on the one hand, Gezel is excluded. So Memela, that's not Gezel. Memela, that was something they were entitled to. But one way or another, this idea of giving a truma to the Kodesh is an investment in the future, in this one's future spirituality. And this is one area where the Gemara says in Maseches Tainis that one is entitled to test God. It's a little bit ambiguous whether that's a reference specifically to Meiser or to Tzedakah in general, but the Gemara says normally you're not supposed to test God, say, I'll do a mitzvah and see what happens. But here, in the reference to Tzedakah, maybe, or at least Meiser, the Gemara says, Bachanuni Nabazos, according from the Pasuk, that come forward and see what happens. You'll see that things are going to go very well for you. We also have the idea that the Yoznei Torah has a comment here, which I guess we'll have an opportunity, hopefully, to talk about in Rishon in Parshas Pekudei, but we'll just mention it here because he talks about it here also, that in the beginning of Parshas Pekudei, in the first Pasuk in Parshas Pekudei, so it's a part of Rishon there, so you find the word Mishkan used twice in a row. It says, Eile Pekudei HaMishkan, Mishkan HaEdus. So there, so Rashi quotes an idea over there in Pekudei that the two references to Mishkan in a row, Rashi says, Shnei Pa'amim, Remez L'Mikdash, Shnis Mashkein, B'Shnei Churbanin, Al Avonoseim Shal Yisrael. That the Mishkan represents, the language represents the idea, it's taken as a Mashkan, it's taken as a collateral, that the Jewish people have to forfeit it because of their sins with the two Churbans. So commenting here with that idea, there's Naim Torah comments that the way of the world is that if somebody has a little bit of a windfall, somebody has a little bit of extra money, so sometimes he'll buy himself a little bit of extra jewelry, something like that. And then if they fall on hard times, so then either they can sell that or they can pawn it. They can give it up as some kind of security and borrow money against it. And they hope that they'll be able to redeem it again. So there's this imagery here that the Jews are on a high now, essentially. They said, Nasa v'nishma, they have some extra schus. So with the extra schus, they get the Mishkan. And the time will come when they're going to have to give up the Bate Mikdash because of their sins. And hopefully they'll be able to redeem them back again. Hopefully we'll get enough schus so that we're back on our feet and we're able to redeem it. We also have the idea here of the Chuli Truma that Rashi points out, Li Lishmi. There's an idea that this has to be Lishma, and what exactly that refers to is an interesting question. The Mishkan has to be Lishma, that the nations have to be Lishma. And the Aznaya Matara comments that the collectors also have to be Lishma. And the Pasuk also continues, Me'ez Kalish Asher Yidvenu Libo, that there has to be a spirit of Nedivus. There has to be an attitude of wanting to give. And here, once again, and we'll be referencing him a lot today, is the Aznai Matara always has a lot of beautiful comments. So the Aznai Matara once again comments that this idea of Asher Yidvenu Libo, that we know we have an idea that we try to give staka before tefillah, inspired by the pasuk in Tehillim, v'ani v'tzedek echazeh panecha, that we want to encounter the Ribbono Shel Olam in an environment of staka, an environment of charity, and that we have this notion that tefillah benefits from an atmosphere of generosity. And through that, he has a somewhat novel interpretation of the Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Brachos and Daf Gimel Amud Beis. So this Daf Yomi almost 2 months ago, I guess, where the Gemara has a statement that one shouldn't daven in a churva. So why is that an issue, davening in a churva, in a ruin? So he suggests that to daven in a place where there's destruction, where nobody cares, where nobody's trying to maintain it, nobody's trying to fix it up, that shows a lack of generosity, a lack of investment, and that's not so conducive to the tefillah. Okay, so what are these trumos come for? What are these trumos meant to accomplish? So Rashi explains that there's actually three trumos, three donations. So one is the truma for the Adonim. That means, well, which is said at a beka logolas, a beka per head, that's for the sockets of the beams and the pillars. And one is a beka for beka logolas, again for head, for the kupos, for the boxes. And that's in order to purchase the korbanos. And there's a third truma that is for the construction of the Mishkan itself. And what's the rate of that? So that is kol asher yidvan libo. That is whatever one is willing to donate based on their inclination of generosity. So once again, to reference the Asnayim LaTorah, this is interesting that here you have a set rate, except that for the building itself, we're able to rely on people's generosity. And this reflects a certain quirk that we see nowadays a lot, and that people are always ready to give for the building more than they are ready to give for that what takes place in the building. You can't put a plaque on Night Seder. So it's harder to, the things that the building exists for, you think, Shalihei Chamer, that the building is just a kli in order to give a context for the activities. So why should people be more ready to pay for the building than for the maintenance of the activities that happen in the building? But that's the reality. The building is flashy. The building has people's name on it. The building gets a lot of attention. So therefore, that is easy to raise money for. Not as easy as you want it to be, but just easier than other things. While that which actually takes place in the building, so you don't necessarily have an easier time raising money for that. Okay, again, not to overstate how easy it is to raise money for buildings. That's not necessarily that easy either. But nonetheless, it is maybe relatively easier compared to that. Okay. So the psukim continue. V'zolsa truma shetichu meitav zahav v'chesef v'nechoshes v'secheles v'argavon v'salashani v'sheish v'izim. So all of these different materials. V'oros elim adamim and ram skins that are dyed red. V'oros tachashim v'atzei shitim and skins of the tachash. So what is the tachash? Sorry.
Domestic-ish animal.
Yeah,
it's
so
like a sheep, like say, or a cow, but
sheep
has
or cow
skin. Yeah.
Interesting skin it has. That seems to be clear. So it's not 100% clear what it was. It seems like it's an animal that doesn't exist anymore. And in fact, there's even one opinion. It sounds like it's actually a unicorn. It's described as an animal with one horn in its forehead, which would work well if we assume that it's an animal that doesn't exist anymore. Some statements in Chazal say it was an animal that was around just then, but not anymore. Maybe around just the time of the Midbar. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbos says that it's an animal that we don't know whether it was a chaya or a behema. We say it was domesticated-ish. But here, Rashi describes it as a minchaya, and also says v'haisa el l'shah. So Rashi says that it's a chaya, but was also only around for a little while. So many of the commentaries ask, why does Rashi say it's a chaya if the Gemara says that we're not sure whether it was a chaya or a behemoth? We don't know if it was a wild animal or a domesticated animal. So the Torah Tumim points out that there are midrashim that say more explicitly that it was the achaya. And there are various suggestions, whether it's a version of some animal that we do have nowadays. Is it a seal, or is it something else? Something with some kind of, as the lady was saying, interesting skin. Or others suggest that it was dyed later, both dyed and was dyed, both different senses of the word. So it's a mysterious animal, the tachash. So we could call it, at least symbolically, a unicorn, even if it wasn't literally a unicorn, something that only seems to exist in its period in time. Okay, so all of those things, shamim amor, besamim l'shamim amishcha, v'ktaris asamim, so oil for lighting, and oil for anointing with, and for bringing up the smoke of the incense, avnei shoham, v'avnei miluim, v'leifah v'lachoshen. One thing I always get a kick out of certain sections in the Torah or in the Haftorahs, certain sections, you find this much more. You find Sfarim titles coming up a lot. So here you have Avnei Miluim. Avnei Shoham is a very popular Sefer title. There's countless Sfarim with that title. Avnei Miluim is the Sefer, the Ksos HaChoshen, that he wrote on Ebenezer. And this next pasuk is very crucial. V'yasuli mikdash v'shachanti v'sacham. Right, we should make a mikdash, and God will live there. So there's a lot to say about this pasuk, both halachically and otherwise. First of all, we're familiar with the observation that God is asking for a sanctuary, and I just kind of blurred the translation. It doesn't say that he will live in it, but what does it say, b'socham, what does that mean? I will live among them, believe kol echad v'echad v'hem, that somehow by creating a mishkan, so we are allowing God to live within us. And it's a delicate point, because the whole idea of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, wanting a place to live, the notion of Ival, the Moshe of Lo, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants a place to live among us, it's a tricky philosophical point. What does that mean, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants something? What does it mean that he wants a place to live? How do we relate to that? But one way or another, the point seems to be that through this creation of a makom, so we are allowing ourselves to have a presence for the Ribbono Shel Olam, and here the Li also, Rashi invokes this idea, Asu L'Shmi, which also has halachic relevance, the notion of a requirement of Lashma for the Mishkan and for the Beis HaMikdash. So this pasuk is quoted by the Menachos Chinuch and others as the source for the mitzvah not only to build the Mishkan, this is in the mitzvah Tzadi Hei in the Sefer HaChinuch, and not only that, but for every Heichal that has been the place for Korbanos throughout Jewish history. So the Mishkan and Shiloh and the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash, all of it is included in this Pasuk. And that's a fascinating idea, because we're all addressing through one pasuk many different edifices that didn't have the same specs, they didn't have the same parameters, they didn't have the same dimensions. Even the first base of Mikdash and the second base of Mikdash didn't have the same dimensions. So how one pasuk addresses them all is an interesting question. The Sefer HaChinuch talks about that, and the Rishonim talk about that already also. And some suggest, it's like the Gemara Maseches Vachim says, that Akol B'Ksav Mi'an Hashem Alai Hiskil, that there is a requirement that anything that is constructed and anything that is added on to the Beis HaMikdash has to happen at the instruction and the guidance of the Navi. So that's the way the mitzvah is formed, that in every generation where there's going to be an opportunity to create an environment for the Karbonos, it's going to happen at the instruction of the Navi, and whatever that generation calls for, so that's what the mitzvah is. It's pointed out that in the Rambam, there seems to be a stira, because the Rambam in Hilchos Beis HaBechira quotes another pasuk for this idea. The Rambam quotes both psukim. He quotes Yasuli Mikdash v'Shachanti B'Socham, but he also quotes the pasuk elsewhere of V'haya Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem Elokeichem L'Shachin Shmo Sham L'Shichna Sidrashu V'asa Sham L'Pasuk and Parshas Re'eg. So some suggest that the yishuv between the two is that V'asu L'Mikdash is the obligation to build the Mikdash, and L'Shichna Sidrashu is the obligation to figure out exactly where it should be, which is its own independent mitzvah, which has its own discussion behind it. That was a part of figuring out exactly where the Makom HaMikdash should be, has its own history and discussion. About 200 years ago, a little bit less, Sir Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer wanted to revive the bringing of the Korbanos, especially Korban Pesach, because he said that Korban Pesach, we're all chayivin nowadays, and we're chayiv karis, if we don't bring a Korban Pesach. And we should be able to bring that anyway, even without everything else. So he wrote letters to many of the gedolim of his day and said that we should bring this back. And they had various objections as to what was getting in the way. And one of it was this consideration of figuring out the exact spot, even if you don't have the Beis HaMikdash, but figuring out the exact spot where it would be, that we have this obligation of L'Shichna Sidrashu. But in any event, so the Gemara in a few places tells us various limitations on this mitzvah of the Binyan Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara in Masech HaShavuos and Daf Tezvav Mibbeis, the Gemara tells us that you can't build the Beis HaMikdash at night. And the Gemara in Masech HaYevamos and the Avav, the Gemara says that the Beis HaMikdash cannot be built on Shabbos or Yontif. We say that Shabbos Osoi Tishmoru, that tells us Mikdashai Tiro, that first comes Shabbos Osoi Tishmoru, so you're not going to set aside Shabbos in order to build the Beis HaMikdash. And that's true about Yom Tov also, Shabbos and Yom Tov, you can't build a Beis HaMikdash. So there is a fascinating discussion. There is a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says that we had to institute a special policy that when it comes to Chadash, so the prohibition of eating the new grains, when does that become lifted? When does that become permitted? So Min HaTorah, the second day of Pesach, after the Hakravas HaOmer, so the new grains are permitted. And that's called Yom Henef, the day of the waving of the grains. But the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a takana that we have to wait another day, that Shiyeh Yom Henef Kulo Aser, that Chadash should not be permitted until the day after. Why? Because when there's a Beis HaMikdash, so first they would have to bring the Korban HaOmer, and then Chadash would be Mutter. Nowadays there's no Beis HaMikdash, so Chadash should Min HaTorah be Mutter right away. But we're worried that if that would be the practice, that could lead to a problem. What's the problem? It's Meheri Yabana HaMikdash, that maybe the Beis HaMikdash is going to be built, and we're not going to be aware that the rules are going to change. So we'll start eating Chadash on the second day of Pesach without waiting for the Hakravas HaOmer. So in order to prevent that from happening, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a takana that it should wait till the next day, Yom Henef Kulo Aser. Okay? So Tzfas Emes has a fascinating point about that, because it's a very far-fetched kind of takana. I mean, how likely is that to happen? And that we have to worry about this so much. So Tzfas Emes points out that the Tosfos that asks why the Gemara one place mentions this takana together with another takana, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai also made the institution that nowadays we should take a lulav for all the days of Pesach, not just the first day. Because in the Beis HaMikdash, they would take the lulav every day of Sukkos, take the lulav every day of Sukkos, so we should take the lulav every day of Sukkos, Zeichel HaMikdash. So So Sfasamis explains that the relationship between the two is that first they made that takana that should take the lulav every day of Sukkot, Zechel and Mikdash. But the problem is that that could be depressing, that we might come to think that if we're making a Zechel and Mikdash, that means it's going to be a long haul. It means it's going to be a long time without a Beis HaMikdash. So we may get sparing. We may think it's not going to be anytime soon. So we have to also counteract that with another takana of this far-fetched concern that the Beis HaMikdash may also pop up at any time. And we have to be ready for a sudden change in the environment. And we shouldn't allow Chodesh on the second day of Pesach, because maybe the rules will suddenly change and we're not going to be prepared. It's a fascinating idea. But in any event, so the Gemara asks, okay, so this far-fetched possibility that the Beis HaMikdash will very recently be put back into place and we're not going to realize that the rules have changed. So when did this happen? So how close could it be to the time of the Heter Chadash that the Beis HaMikdash got rebuilt and people didn't realize that the rules had changed? So the Gemara says two possibilities. Either it was, we're talking now about the 16th of Nisan, right, the second day of Pesach. So how close was it to the Beis HaMikdash was rebuilt? Either it was the night before or it was late in the day before. So what's the problem with those two suggestions? So what do we see about the limitation on building the Beis HaMikdash? Can't do it at night, so that can't do it on Yontif, right? The day before is the first day of Pesach, is Yontif. Night before is night. So how can the Gemara give those suggestions? It contradicts the rules. So a number of Rishonim, Rashi and a bunch of other Rishonim explain that when talking about the third Beis HaMikdash, it's a different story. We have an idea from the Navi, Vani Osid Livnosa Be'esh, that the third Beis HaMikdash is not going to be built by us. It's going to come down Min HaShamayim already in a flame, and it's just going to be there. So we don't have to actually build it. So that's a fascinating idea on a lot of levels. And it's a good question then, why does the Rambam bring a mitzvah l'doros of Binyan Beis HaMikdash if the future Beis HaMikdash doesn't actually have to be built by us? So a little bit of a complex question. Some will say it's a mixture. The Beis HaMikdash itself will come down, but there'll be some final step that we'll do. That's something we have to figure out. But what we see from here, as some Achronim observe, as the Mikdash David, for example, Mikdash David was Rav David Rappaport, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Rav Elchanan Wasserman's Yeshiva in Baranovich, points out that you see that it's not a posel, that a Beis HaMikdash that's made at night or on Yontif is not disqualified from being a Beis HaMikdash. It's just we're not allowed to do it. But if a Kadosh Baruch Hu were to put it into place at that time, it would still be a kosher Beis HaMikdash.
All right. But isn't there also like a svar that like Hashem keeps all the missiles also, so how do you...
An interesting question, yeah. So it's seeming, for whatever reason, it seems to be something that only restricts us, and somehow this is not a limitation on how Kadosh Baruch Hu does it. Maybe because of the way it's built, maybe because of how it's put into place. It's
Or like maybe that like it was made before, so it's just...
Perhaps, yeah. It's an interesting formulation one way or another. But maybe it's useful to address a certain question, because if we see there's a limitation at night, a limitation on Shabbos or Yontif, so there are many who raise the question that the Rambam has a psak at the beginning of Hilchos Beis HaBechira, and the Rambam says that we have a mitzvah of Binyan Beis HaMikdash, and the Rambam says that everybody is obligated in this mitzvah, men and women. So there are many who raise the question on this Rambam that something doesn't seem to fit. What's the problem? Let me figure it out. So maybe it's a mitzvah seishas man grama. Because if you think about it, what is the paradigmatic, if you learn the sugya of mitzvah seisha as mangrama and mesachas kedushin, so what is the paradigmatic mitzvah seisha as mangrama? It's actually, sorry?
Shabbos.
Well, Shabbos has got its own rules to it, and actually the positive mitzvahs are actually excluded. Tefillin is right, the paradigmatic mitzvah as mangrama. So why is tefillin a mitzvah seisha as mangrama? What is time bound about it? Don't do it on Shabbos, and you don't do it. Don't put it on at night. So no Shabbos, no night. So what else is no Shabbos and no night? Binyan Beis Hamikdash. So, sorry.
Also on
Yom Tov, right? Shabbos and Yom Tov for night, and Tefillin, same rules. So basically, it seems that the same exclusions that you have for Tefillin that make your mitzvah say Shas Monogramma, you have for the Beis Hamikdash. So if tefillin is a mitzvah seisha as mangrama, how come Beis HaMikdash also isn't? So a number of svarim take up this question. Some draw on what we just said a minute ago, that maybe the point is that it's not a posel, it's not like the mitzvah doesn't apply during those times, but it's that there's an external prohibition. When you say you can't build a Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos, we mean that the Isurim of Malacha on Shabbos don't allow us to build a Beis HaMikdash, not that the mitzvah is mufka. So like, for example, the mitzvah of Maika that we spoke about yesterday in a different context, the mitzvah of building a fence around your roof. So the Mishnah in Kedushin identifies that as a positive mitzvah, she'en hazman grama. It's not a time-bound mitzvah. So you might say, well, why not? Can't do that on Shabbos, right? You can't build that construction project on Shabbos. So you'll say that, yeah, but that doesn't mean it's a mitzvah say Shas Man Grama. It's a mitzvah that applies all the time. And there's an external prohibition to do it on Shabbos, but it's not part of the boundaries of the mitzvah. So to here, maybe when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, the mitzvah really applies all the time. It's just that there is a external prohibition to build it on Shabbos. So that's one approach. But there are a number of other approaches to this question. And for example, the Tshuvas Minchas Elazar, the Winkatcher Rebbe, so he has four approaches to this question. There's four answers to why it is that building the Beis HaMikdash is not considered to be a mitzvah saseh shahazman grama, even though it sounds like, comparing it to tefillin, sounds like it should be. Want to try to guess any of the answers? What might be some of the answers? Or any other answers? So, one answer he has is that it depends what you mean by exclusions. So there's different levels of involvement. This is that the hammer and nail, so to speak, just speaking metaphorically, the actual construction, that's what we can't do on Shabbos or Yom Tov. But the broader project, that has aspects that are done on Shabbos or Yom Tov and nighttime. So if you're going to build the Beis HaMikdash, if you were going to find out tomorrow that we have a go on building the Beis HaMikdash, so what's going to happen? You're going to have committees, and we'll have meetings, and the rabbi will give drushes about it, and we'll be told to take out a few minutes before shiur to announce to everybody to register for fundraising, for to sign up. So there'll be all kinds of different levels of involvement that's not the same as the actual construction. So first of all, that's what's not in Mr. Seisha's Mangrama, and that's probably what the Rambam means when he says that everybody should be involved. That's one approach. Another approach he has is that when we talk about stopping for Shabbos and Yom Tov, it's not really comparable to tefillin, because today is Thursday, so I have a mitzvah of tefillin today, and when it gets dark tonight, that mitzvah of tefillin is going to end, and tomorrow, Friday, I'll have another mitzvah of tefillin. So the mitzvah of tefillin is completely bound in by this morning until tonight. But for the Beis HaMikdash, let's say I had a mitzvah today of binyan Beis HaMikdash, so then tonight it's not going to stop. It's just going to take a break. It's the difference between the stop button and the pause button. Basically, be on pause and take a break, but tomorrow I'll resume the same mitzvah. So therefore, maybe it's not comparable to tefillin from that angle. Another possibility he has is that, and this is something a number of other Acharonim, such as the Tshuva's Beis Yitzchak and others touched upon, is that maybe there's just a derivation from a pasuk that that's not the din. Because the same way we find, for example, Kiddush should really be a mitzvah seisha as mangrama, or matzah on Pesach should be a mitzvah seisha as mangrama. But we have limudim from Sukkim that they're not, that women are obligated in Kiddush, obligated in matzah and Pesach. So too, when it comes to the Mishkan, so the Torah tells us explicitly that women were involved. Kali Shah Chachmas Lev, etc. There's explicit references in the Torah to women being involved. Now, one could argue, maybe that means they volunteered to be involved, doesn't mean they were obligated to be involved. That's a little bit of a discussion, but one could say that just like when it comes to Kiddush and Matzah, so we have Psukim telling us that despite the fact that it's otherwise the mitzvah seisha is mangrama, we have an exception here, so maybe it's also true by the Mishkan, we have an exception, and women are chayavos. A fourth approach he has is that when it comes to Kudshim, it's not clear that we follow all the same rules. The Gemara in the middle of Zvachim has a whole discussion that Kutchin may follow different rules than the rest of the Torah. So maybe it could be that Mitzvah Sasei Shahazman Grama actually is not an exclusion there. Might be. But then you also have to figure out it could be that based on Mikdash construction is not Kutchin. If you're going to say that Kutchin has its own rules, you have to figure out what is Kutchim. Is Kutchim specifically the Karbanos, or is Kutchim something broader than that, everything connected to the Karbanos? So that itself is a whole discussion to consider. So those are a few approaches to that question, but there's more also to look at. And the former chief rabbi of Israel, Beilau, the father of the current chief rabbi of Israel, Meir Lau, has a nice discussion about this in his Shuvas Yachal Yisrael, where he considers the question, this is the mitzvah of Binyan Beis HaMikdash, is that a mitzvah on the Yachid? That everyone has a personal responsibility to be involved in the building? And the Rambam may sound like that a little bit in Hilchos Beis HaBechira. Or is it a mitzvah on the Tzibur as a whole? And one is only obligated because they are a part of the tzibur. And he notes from some svarim that interpret the psukim that you see various parshanis inclinations. So, for example, the Chasam Sofer, Al HaTorah, on the pasuk of Ru Kara Hashem B'Shem Betzalel, that when Betzalel was appointed, the Chasam Sofer says it's like Betzalel was selected the Torah Shlichus to represent all the Jewish people as if they all did it through him. That's also how the Arachayim sounds. However, the Sforno and the Pasuk V'yasu B'nei Yisrael, the Sforno understands differently that the Pasuk means to suggest that everyone contributes, but that doesn't mean they actually do the building. So when we talk about a mitzvah of the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, does that mean that it's a chiyuv on everybody? Or it's a chiyuv on the tzibur? And everybody is only obligated as a part of the tzibur. He points out various nafkaminas that would have. So, for example, are ketanim obligated? Ketanim don't have any personal obligations in mitzvos. But maybe if you're saying the whole tzibur is obligated, so then maybe ketanim should also be part of it. And that affects another gemara, because the gemara Maseches Shabbos and Daf Kuf Tes in the Beis, the Gemara says that Ein Mevatlin Tinokas Shel Beis Rabban Afilu Binyan Beis HaMikdash, that we don't interrupt the students or the little children who are learning Torah even for the Binyan Beis HaMikdash. So if children are obligated, so then that's a chiddush, that means that we're not going to mevatel even the children themselves. But if children aren't obligated in the first place, then of course we're not mevatel them, So it must mean they were talking about the Rebbeim. Okay. He also points out, the Achad Yisrael, that it also has an afkamina for Talmud Torah of adults. Because the general rule is that a osik b'Torah is not pater min ha-mitzvah unless it's a mitzvah that others can also do. So is this a personal chiv? Binyan Beis HaMikdash, in which case maybe you should say that Talmud Torah doesn't pater you? Or is this a chiv on the whole tzibur, in which case you could say that if you're involved in learning, so then let somebody else do it. So then, his point is that this really should have an afkamina as to whether it's a mitzvah to say Shazman Gram or not. Question that we started with. That if it's a personal chiv, okay, so then Nashim should be pater because it seems to be time-bound. But if you want to say that it's not a personal chiv in the first place, the chiv on all the tzibur, so then women are obligated, that's what the Rambam is presumably getting at, that women are obligated from that perspective, that they're obligated not as personal obligation, but as part of the tzibur, because the whole tzibur is relevant. So this is probably also connected to another question, the question of what is the function of the Beis HaMikdash in the first place. Is the Beis HaMikdash to say that it's a mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash? Is that because it serves an end, it serves some other purpose, so we need to build a Beis HaMikdash so that we can do something? Or is it its own mitzvah? It's a mitzvah stam to have a Beis HaMikdash. And it's pointed out in the later Sfarim that we have a parallel machlokas regarding shuls. That some assume that there's a mitzvah to build shuls also. That the Gemara says in the end of Megillah that based on Pasuk Yechezkel, v'hilachem l'mikdash ma'at, that we'll build, it will be the shuls v'atekneisiyos shebavavel as a small version of the Beis HaMikdash. So the notion of there being a mitzvah to build a shul, so there you also find a discussion, does that mean that it is a mitzvah in itself, or a mitzvah because it provides a venue for Torah and Tefillah and the like? So how do you look at the mitzvah of building the Beis HaMikdash? Is it a mitzvah because it provides a space for korbanos? Is that the idea? Or is it a mitzvah in and of itself to have a Beis HaMikdash? Which may also correlate to this question of, is it a personal mitzvah, or is it just something that Tzibur does in order to have a Beis HaMikdash so that it can carry out all the functions? So that may affect a number of other things. It may affect, for example, the Tshuva and the Tshuva's Chazon Nochem. I think we mentioned him before. He was the brother of the Tshubin Rav. There's a discussion about the whole question of when Tisha B'Av should be observed. That we observe Tisha B'Av on the 9th of Av, but there was an opinion in the Gemara that it should have been observed on the 10th of Av, because most of the Churban took place on the 10th. So the Chazon Ochim says, maybe it depends what we are mourning. Are we mourning the loss of the building, in which case most of it burnt on the 10th? Or are we mourning the loss of the Korbanos, in which case, as soon as the Beis HaMikdash was compromised, was breached, it was already no good for the Korbanos, so then that's why the 9th of Av gets chosen. So all these questions are all tally in each other. And it's interesting also that there is a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban, about whether this mitzvah of the Asuli Mikdash, does that include also the Kalim? That's the way the Rambam understood. Or does it only apply to the binyan, to the building? The Ramban understood that it only applies to the building and the Kalim are separate. So what's that machlokas about? Seems, as the Achronim explain, that the Rambam understands that the purpose of the Binyan Beis HaMikdash was for the Korbanos. So therefore, everything that's necessary for the Korbanos, like the Kalim, is all part of the mitzvah. While the Ramban understands that the mitzvah of the Binyan Beis HaMikdash was for itself, was to have a Beis HaMikdash. Why? So if the Ramban l'shitaso and Chumash over here and the Asuli Mikdash, so the Ramban says that the purpose of the building is to have a home for the Shechina. not about the korbanos per se. But the Rambam will hold that it's all there to facilitate the korbanos, and therefore, perhaps that's all the Rambam will shita so, that the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is really a means to an end. It's there for the korbanos. So therefore, when we say women are obligated, it means in the broader communal sense, and that's why it's not a mitzvah seisha as one gram. So it could all reconnect. Now, we should point out that this could still be true, even though the Rambam follows the opinion in the Gemara, you don't actually need the korbanos, you don't actually need the Beis HaMikdash for korbanos. Now, when the Gemara says, Shamati, Shemakriven, Afal Pisha ain't bias, there's an opinion in the Gemara that you can have korbanos even without a Beis HaMikdash, and that was Ritzvi Hirsch Kalish's plan to bring Korban Pesach without a Beis HaMikdash. So it's not a contradiction to say that you can bring korbanos without the Beis HaMikdash, but the Beis HaMikdash is there for korbanos. Because look at the shul, for example. So we know we build shuls for tefillah, even though we can have tefillah without a shul. So clearly it enhances tefillah, even if it's possible to have tefillah without it. So the same could be true for the korbanos. Okay, so far so good? All right, so we'll just say a few more, one or two more quick points about the rest of the Aliyah, and then we'll wrap up. Just skip to the end. So the pasuk get Aleph for a second. So here, regarding the Aron, we'll start from Yud. So the Torah says, "V'asu Aron atzi shitim." So you should make an Aron out of shitim wood. Amasayim v'chetzi arko. It should be length of 2.5 amos, v'amah v'chetzi rachbo, and it should have a width of an amah and a chetzi, v'amah v'chetzi komasa, and it should have a height of an amah and a half. V'tzipiso sazav tar, and it should cover with pure gold, mi'bayis mi'chutz tapena, from inside the outside should cover it, v'yasisa alav, zer zahav saviv, so you should put a gold crown, essentially, gold surrounding it. So here the Gemara Maseches Yuma and Daf Ayin Beis and Mibbeis. The Gemara explains that basically there are three crowns around different parts of the Mishkan, around the Mizbeach, around the Aron, and around the Shulchan, to represent the three different concepts: the Malchus, which David took, and the Kahuna, which Aaron took, and the Torah, which we understand is open to all of us, which is not the Yerusha, and is available to all of us, and that remains a enduring message. And we'll just mention one more idea towards the end of the Aliyah. That the Aliyah at the end talks about the Badim. Here in this Chumash we have very helpful pictures with the Badim, the staves it's called here. So the Torah says that b'tabos aron yu habadim lo yasurim menu. So you should have these staves. These are holders. These are long sticks that they use to move the aron. And even though they're there for the purposes of portability, so you're not supposed to move them out. You're not supposed to remove them. And the Gemara says in that same daf in Yuma, in the previous Amud, in Ayin Beis Amud Aleph, so the Gemara says that if somebody is meziach lechoshen, if somebody takes the choshen off the ephod, or if somebody takes out the badim, so it's chayiv malchus, it's an issur. But the Rambam says the difference, that when it comes to the ephod, so it's only if it's derech kilkel, if he's basically messing it up. When it comes to the badim, you take the badim out at all, so then that's an issur, you are chayiv malchus. So why is that a concern, why you're not allowed to take it out? So the Sefer HaChinuch discussed this a little bit, and he says that there's a remez in the tzura of the aron, so it's all part of it, even though it's functional, but it's all a part of how it's supposed to look, so therefore you were supposed to keep it there. And he also adds that it's out of kavod, that because we want to be able to go on the rush, to be able to go on the run, if there's some kind of a rush, we should be able to pick it up and go. So we don't want to have any kind of problems with that. So it's more of a chavadik if its portability is always there. By Simon in the Sefer Mebarach, he talks about this, and he brings also that the Meshach Chachma's comment that this is symbolic to refer to the supporters of Torah. They're the badim that support the Aron, represent the supporters of Torah. And Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch, maybe we'll just close with this, and this perhaps is also synergistically relevant to the topic that we had in our Shir lunch, said it's to represent the portability of the Torah, to show that the Torah can go anywhere, and that even once you have left the real world of the Beis HaMedrash, even when you're no longer in that rarefied environment, so you still take the Torah with you. You still carry it with you on your person, with you on your journeys, and therefore the symbolism of these badim that are used to carry it around, that always has to be a part of it in order for that to be understood as how the Torah functions and relates to us as something that we can always bring with us. Okay, well, we'll stop here. Wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos Parshas Tumah.